and bienvenue to the Offside Rule Women's World Cup Edition in association with Spotify. It's me, I'm back. Hello, Kate Borsay, back in the hot seat. And it is hot here. Summer's finally arrived in the UK, but it's not as hot as it looks in France. Steaming. And in the studio to celebrate the sun, or not the sun, in the jazz basement, it's a welcome back to author, journalist, dog whisperer in training, and the person who yesterday described Sam Kerr's missed penalty as waddle-esque in its epic awfulness, it's Dr. Carrie Dunn.
Hello.
What a whopping comment that was, Carrie. I actually made a note whilst I was listening this morning. I was so impressed with it. With Carrie, talking of impressive things, it's our Brazilian expert, voice of Arsenal Women's Ask Cast podcast and giver of Portuguese phrases, Tim Stillman.
Boa noite.
Does that mean good night?
Yes, it
does.
Oh,
how good am I at Portuguese? So yesterday we called England versus Cameroon the ultimate big cat grudge match. And we really undersold it.
Shambolic end to the first half for Cameroon. They've totally lost their composure here now.
Not seen anything like it.
It's almost as if they don't want to carry on. It's ruled out. It's offside. It's a let-off for England. And here they come again, the protests. The referee has got to get control of this.
Two very different lioness sides here. Do you fight like a lion or roar in revenge? Well, there's so much to talk about in this game. It's hard to remember. England are through to the quarterfinals of the Women's World Cup, having won every single one of their games at this tournament so far. But the 3-0 win against Cameroon was a test of mental strength as much as it was about physicality and ever-dwindling energy levels. The first question has to be, have you, both of you, ever seen a match as bonkers as this at a Women's World Cup?
It is the most ridiculous thing I have ever seen, I think, on a football match, ever.
I'm getting shades of anger from Dr. Carrie Dunn.
Anger, confusion, bewilderment.
Exhaustion.
It's all kind of, yeah, it's all building up at this point, yeah.
Tim?
Can I be honest? I kind of liked it, though. I really, really liked it.
Because, what, really?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I watch a lot of South American football, so I'm maybe like a little bit immune.
To drama?
Being a little bit bonkers.
Protests,
yeah.
On the pitch, refusing to leave. In fact, stop right there, because I'm going to recap it. For those people who didn't manage to catch the game, here we go. Let's go first half. A Cameroon back pass resulted in an indirect free kick for England. Steph Horton scored. Cameroon say it wasn't a back pass, but it stood. Elbow to the jaw of Nikita Paris next, punished by a yellow, should it have been a red. Deep into added time in the first half, a terrific finish from Ellen White to take England 2-0 up, except it went to VAR for offside, it was cleared and the goal stood. Cameroon very aggrieved at the decision and refused to restart the end of the half. Referee King Liang with no handle on the situation at all. Second half, Cameroon hit the back of the net just minutes in, but it was ruled offside. Ajara and Chu head in hands, clearly extremely upset, and she wasn't the only one. That's when it really started to get emotional. Then, a goal for England, a cross from Tony Duggan slotted away by Alex Greenwood. 3-0. With 10 to go, Frank Kirby was caught late by Song Keng. Should that have been a pen? Maybe. A heavy challenge on Steph Horton, just minutes from the final whistle, should arguably have earned Cameroon a red card. 18 minutes of added time on overall, and I haven't even mentioned any of the blooming football yet. I hope you managed to keep up. That, you know, some idea of what this game was about. Afterwards, Phil Neville said it didn't feel like football. The behaviour was wrong. Carrie?
Yeah. I don't think it was necessarily, obviously, the best behaviour by Cameroon. Some of it was understandable. I can understand being upset and frustrated and generally quite annoyed by decisions going against you. I think ultimately the decisions the referee made were right. I think it was just the manner in which she tried to referee the game. And Cameroon were clearly very angry all the way through. I mean, there was one point when the Cameroon players actually pushed the referee over. There was no comeback on that either. It was just a ridiculous match. And it felt like it was teetering on the edge of actually falling apart. Into absolute proper chaos.
Well, the ref was criticised heavily for not carding the players, for not taking more direct action when, at the end of the first half, they refused to come out of the centre circle in protest at that second goal from England.
Yeah, I mean, the parallel I drew was England against Pakistan in the Test match at the Oval in 2006. Yes. Another match I was covering when the Pakistan players refused to come back out after the interval. And I almost thought that was going to happen. But I think at that situation, you've got to speak to the captain. That's what the captain is there for.
Well, actually,
she has to get a grip. She has to take responsibility
and
for
actually,
her players.
In her defence, Ongene, the Cameroon captain, was trying to calm things down. She was trying to rally her team together, as was the coach, so it appeared, at some stages. But you don't really know what obviously happened at halftime. And we're actually going to speak to Lindsay Hooper about that as well. What did the coach say at halftime? But there were a couple of players there, and Chu particularly, who wouldn't let it go, who became over-emotional, who took her emotions onto the pitch. I don't mind that, but it disrupted the game.
Yeah, I think so. And I think Cameroon started off a little bit emotional. That elbow on Nikita Paris happened in the opening minutes. So I'm not sure. Well, I think they did gradually kind of get wound up a little bit more. But they obviously came out with a brief to kind of get in England's faces and be physical, which I kind of think is fine, even if they overstepped the mark at times. But it was a really kind of broken up game because of everything that was going on. And I've never really seen scenes like that before. When Cameroon had their goal disallowed, you know, a couple of their players actually looked like they were in tears, which
they were.
Yeah, which I've not seen before, which was quite interesting. But I think a sign that perhaps things had got to them a little bit.
OK, well, Sue Smith, commentating on the match for the BBC, gave us her thoughts on the game following the final whistle.
Wow, that's all I can say. You know, I think I need a sit down after that one. It was just a real crazy game to talk about. We were having to sort of say what was happening. We actually didn't really know what was going on. You know, we thought at one point that the Cameroon players were going to walk off the field. I'm just really pleased that the England players have come away unscathed, because that challenge on Steph Horton was a red card, in my opinion. I think it was only because it was late on in the game, which doesn't matter. But I think that was probably the reason she didn't get the red card. I feel that we should have had a penalty. I thought Frank Kirby was brought down. So, you know, we end up, instead of saying brilliant, England have just won 3-0 and we're through to the quarterfinals, where we're talking about other scenes and other things that have happened in the game. And
yeah,
I suppose that's the frustration. I really loved what Phil Neville said at the end. I thought he was absolutely spot on with what he spoke about, that he wants his players to go out and play football and have fun. That wasn't football. It was a horrible game. It was a horrible game to watch, to commentate on, and I can imagine to play in as well.
Yeah, Phil's post-match comments saying that the behaviour was wrong, that it was going out worldwide, setting a bad example to young girls watching. Some very strong comments from Phil post-match, actually. We have to find out whether there are ramifications on that. Also, Alex Scott, you know, visibly angry at the end of the game and at the referee, calling the ref's performance embarrassing. What are your thoughts on that?
I thought it was such a difficult game for the referee to try and officiate, because there were so many things going on. And yeah, I agree with Alex in the fact that we need better officials. I think the standard has improved in this tournament in certain games, but in other games it's been really, really poor. And as the football's developing and getting better, the officials need to as well. It's just we're constantly talking about VAR. I don't think I've ever commentated on a game that the 18 minutes added time in the end overall.
Yes, and actually the VAR decisions seemed like mostly correct to us, but that they did was wound up the Cameroon players even more. I mean, all of that time checking it, such a tough game for you as well. And as a former player, I mean, how would you have coped with that game if you were in an England shirt?
I've got to say, I thought England coped with it really well, because there was the alleged spitting incident on Tony Duggan. Again, didn't react, carried on. I thought she got better and better as the game went on. I thought the test this time, it was more of a psychological test. It was like, how can they cope with all of these incidents, with all of these things going on? They just had to remain focused. And I thought at times, defensively, England looked a little bit fragile. And I thought that Steph Horton led by example. I thought she was brilliant throughout. But they were getting in, you know, and that concerned me slightly. But I thought what was good, I thought the way that, you know, he wants them to play football, but when you're trying to play football and you're trying to take players on and, you know, you're passing it one and two touch and you think there's going to be a big challenge coming in, that's hard, because you're waiting for that tackle. And I think that's probably why some of the passes went astray, because of that So I thought, well played for England to do that.
Thanks very much to Sue Smith there. Let's pick up on Phil Neville's comments. Said it's going out worldwide. Young girls are watching this, and I can't stand here and say that that's right, Carrie. The FA, though, clarified a few of Fizz's comments. Other comments.
Yes, we have had an FA message through this evening just to clarify that Phil said that Cameroon need to get their ship in order. It's obviously some kind of nautical term. Maybe. So just to note that, please.
Maybe. Do we agree that it was bad for women's football?
No. This is absolute nonsense. And this is one of my little hobby horses. If it's bad for football, it's bad for football. When men do bad things in men's football, no one ever says, oh, it's very bad for young boys growing up to watch this. I don't want my son watching this. This is bad for men's football. It's just bad for football. If it's bad for football, there we go. This isn't women's football that needs to take responsibility for this. The Cameroon players need to take responsibility for what they did or didn't do. The Cameroon manager needs to as well. But
what about the ref, though, Tim? I mean,
oh, God. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yes. So you are not a big fan of the ref?
I wasn't. I mean, as I said, I think the decisions that she made ultimately were right in terms of kind of the letter of the law, but the way in which she refereed it was not strong enough.
For me, it's that the worst thing in the game that happened for me was that tackle on Steph Horton, which I thought was a very deliberate attempt to injure a player. And so I understood Phil Neville's comments. I thought he had every right to be angry. I do think some of the, this is, you know, there are little girls watching, pearl clutching was a bit much, but perhaps I give him the benefit of the doubt in that that Steph challenge happened right in front of him just before the end of the game. And he was obviously het up about that.
Yeah.
And I completely understand that. But how the referee looks at that a second time and thinks that that's a yellow card, I think, to be honest, at that point, she just didn't want the grief of sending somebody off.
And she's not going to referee again in this World Cup?
Wouldn't have thought so, no.
OK, let's get on to the actual football. And it means, Tim, that we are kind of masking the fact that England, again, weren't great in this game.
They look like England kind of always have under Phil Neville for me, which is good in parts, bad in parts, average in parts. And there doesn't really seem to be a linear kind of progression for England under Phil Neville. I saw some comments he made before the game, actually, where he was talking about, you know, we must not compromise on our style. And I was thinking, style? I'm not sure I've seen one yet.
I think a few people were asking that on Twitter, weren't they?
Yeah, but then an interview a couple of days earlier, he said, oh, I changed my players so much because we have different players for different styles. And you kind of think, which is it? I don't know. I just get the sense he's doing quite a lot of ad-libbing and a bit of filibustering because I love that.
Filibustering.
Filibustering.
Yeah.
We need to adopt that one. Carrie, England looked tired in this game. It looked incredibly hot in Valenciennes, didn't it? But you have to credit their mental strength for lasting the course, because I'd imagine that they were as bemused as we were watching with what was going on the pitch with the opposition.
Absolutely. I think that's probably the biggest takeaway from this match, is that they kept their heads, they kept it professional, they kept calm, when it would have been very easy to also have got angry at what was happening and to respond to the physicality with physicality of their own. But they didn't. They clearly had some kind of plan that they were trying to stick to. It was executed sloppily in a lot of places. But, and I've said this before about England, they're stringing the wins together and they're getting the job done. And that's what you need to do in tournament football.
Just quickly, Kerry, picking up on Cameroon, they did find the back of the net, as I've mentioned, in the second half. They did have more chances on goal as well. Some great saves by Karen Bardsley. England's back line looked a bit gappy. They looked a little bit shell-shocked.
They did. I mean, I thought they looked very good going forward. But, you know, they're a defence. They're supposed to be there to do some defending. And they did look shaky at times. So I guess it was fortunate that Cameroon didn't punish those errors. And I suspect they're going to need to butt their ideas up against Norway.
Buck your ideas up, says Carrie Dunn. Speaking of Norway, Tim, your feelings on this one, because this is not as straightforward. Well, in fact, this game wasn't straightforward at all, but you know what I'm saying. This one is hard, much harder on paper.
Yeah, I think this is a real coin toss match, I have to say. I have an inkling it might go all the way to penalties, but, you know, as Carrie said, England's defence hasn't really convinced yet, and Norway have got some really top-tier talent going forward, and I think they'll give England a lot of problems, actually, and I can see this being a real 50-50 affair.
Well, if it does go to extra time and pens, it'll be Carrie Dunn's fault, because generally when she's in, it's extra time or pens or both. Let's head over to Lindsay Hooper. She's been in and out of all the post-match action. Lindsay? Let's just find out from you what Phil Neville has said. So we know post-match, obviously, Phil Neville said that it wasn't football. He said it's going out worldwide. Yeah. Young girls are watching it. I can't stand here and say that it's right. Just pick up on that, because this theme continued in his press conference, did it?
It did. I mean, he just expanded on that further. I mean, first of all, he didn't even start with a question. He said, I want to speak first. He updated everybody on Steph's situation, because you might have seen that tackle towards the end of the match. So Steph was meant to be doing the press conference with him, but he excused her and apologised and said that it was his call. But because of the injury, he didn't want her to do the press conference. And yes, he did continue that theme in his press conference as well. He talked about how he was ashamed of the Cameroons, utterly proud of his players, and how controlled and considered and calm they maintained on the pitch. He even said at halftime he didn't even have to say anything, because as he was lingering by the door to the dressing room, he could hear them all coaching each other through it, through the discipline, through keeping your head. And I think that goes to show this England performance. I think perhaps it's the best thing that's come out of this match, is that this group really collectively can just contain themselves. And they did. They did themselves proud. They did the country proud. And I think everybody in the end was rooting for England around the world for the sake of football. Whether you like England as a team or not, even the French supporters in the stadium were rooting for them in the end.
And what about the Cameroon presser? Did you grab any lines from that?
I only understood limited parts, because it was done through translation. But there were lots of English journalists putting questions to the Cameroon coach, whether he felt that they'd been a disgrace, whether he'd been let down. And actually, just overall, he backed them. He seemed to be quite proud of his players, which was completely baffling. And the only explanation that I can think for this is that they just didn't understand the rules. Now, this isn't going to be anything that hasn't been explained to them a million times. You know, this is a World Cup. The thoroughness that you go through, you know, just with VAR alone, let alone, you know, the rule book as itself gets sent to everybody.
It was bizarre. And I think after the game, Cameroon came out and said that they felt it wasn't a back pass. So that's why they strongly disagreed with that. They didn't think it was a back pass. Also, their player, Reza Fuego, said, we didn't want to play anymore. We just wanted the game to be over. We continued playing for our country despite the referee doing her dirty work. And also that the manager told the team, Juenfa told the team at halftime, don't worry, the referee wants England to win today. Now, both of those comments are really inciting, you know, particularly if you're telling your team at halftime.
I will jump in on that one, because that was one that Phil Neville picked up on, that comment by the coach at halftime, because he said that the actions of the players mirrored the coach. So the coach has to take an element of responsibility for that. And he should have been calming down the players, not inciting it further and speculating, which is all that was. You know, there was no way that referee was going for England more than Cameroon. It was just an awful situation in terms of many decisions that needed checking, disputing, stopping and starting. And that, you know, that does disturb the game somewhat. I do want to give a positive from a Cameroon side, because I actually have heard that there were lots and lots of Cameroon fans at the England Hotel, which they're jointly sharing with Cameroon. And they all applauded England as they got back to the hotel. So that was a nice touch. And also a lovely thing, let's not forget some of these takeaways. You know, the fact that Lucy Staniforth and Leah Williamson got some game time, they're absolutely over the moon about that. That's a huge positive that carries on this winning momentum as well forward, because everybody feels like they've been involved with it. And then the other thing is, you know, Jill Scott with that absolutely brilliant record now. Like, she's overtaken Peter Shilton as an England player who's got the most caps in World Cups. And that's lovely, because we're seeing records broken during this tournament, left, right and centre.
Certainly. And you're off to Le Havre, which is great. Did you get to go bowling last night? How did he get on?
Can you update Matt for me as well, please?
Yes. Did you get a turkey, was it?
I didn't get that, but I did get a few strikes and spares, and it was a joint effort. So I actually shared, Kate, you're not going to believe this, but I shared my bowling with Faye Carruthers. So we both were a team. She had a go, I had a go, and jointly we got 115.
But if Faye hadn't been any good, You would not have had her as partner again, right? She would have been biffed off the Hooper squad.
I watched her. She had great technique. Brilliant. I see.
And can I just say that oui, oui, oui is not an appropriate French word to have learnt yesterday when you dropped that one in. Go on, please.
Donc.
Oh, well, yeah. So, donc, which is what you say when you're padding out and you're desperately trying to speak in French and you're thinking, what do I say next? And you go, donc.
That sounds appropriate for us right now at this point of the tournament.
Lindsay Hooper there, I'm sure we'll be catching up with her very soon. Up next, the hosts were in action. Well, a pretty cagey affair had to be settled in extra time because Carrie Dunn's here. After it finished, one goal apiece after 90 minutes. Both goals in the second half for France's Valérie Gauvin and for Brazil, Thaisa got the equaliser. It was Amandine Henry who finally broke the deadlock in extra time. Hosts France are through.
Allez, à nouveau Amel Majri. Cette fois-ci, c'est bien parti. C'est très bien parti!
To the quarterfinals. Was this a poor France side, Tim, or Brazil surpassing expectations? Because the French were overwhelmingly, weren't they, the favourites going into this one?
Yeah, little from column A, little from column B, I think. France haven't really impressed me that much since the first game. I think they've been a little bit in second gear. Brazil have really surpassed my expectations in this whole tournament, actually. I kind of had an inkling they'd go home without a win in the group stages. So, you know, they got 6 points, which, and to be fair to them, they were really unfortunate to get 6 points and finish third. Usually that's enough to get you second or first in a group. And actually, I thought for once they were tactically quite smart. They dropped Marta back into midfield to get a little bit of a better foothold there. And even that Brazilian defence, which has looked quite weak during this tournament, didn't look duly troubled by France.
Yeah, especially when you bear in mind the strength of the French attack with Le Sommer. Cascarino came on late into the game. Their number 10, Madri, was in and about buzzing all over the place. Let's run through one of the VAR incidents in this one, because this is an interesting one. This is during the first half. The teams really cancelled each other out in this first half, and it seems even the French don't much like VAR anymore, Kerry. Just explain what happened the first time that Gauvin found the back of the net.
So this one was the one that was ruled out for Gauvin's challenge on Barbara and
the goalkeeper,
who the reviewing suggested that Gauvin's challenge had knocked the ball out of Barbara's hands. I was puzzled by this one, to be honest.
Puzzled?
Again, I'm bewildered a lot lately, Kate. It's really bad. I didn't think Barbara had the ball under control. I didn't think she had it in her hands. And there did seem to be a handball in the lead up to it as well, which we were talking about off air. So if it had been ruled out for that, I would have understood it. But if it was ruled out for the challenge on the goalkeeper, which is what it seemed to have been, I don't know whether that was actually the correct decision. But, you know, VAR... clear and obvious, obviously.
There were other incidents of VAR, as per usual, but the main talking point of the game really is how France struggled, and I'm sure L'Équipe and a lot of the French media and the French press will be probably laying into their team. So if USA do win, as expected in their round of 16 game, and the teams meet in the quarterfinals, so USA-France, what can the USA identify as weak points in this France side, Tim?
I'm not sure how much the USA operate that way, kind of looking at weaknesses of other teams. I think they'll go out there and do their thing. And in a way, that will probably be identifying France's weak points at the moment. I think there's some suggestion that France are mentally beginning to find this quite tough, the expectation of being the home nation. You know, we can see the difference in them since that opening game when they just flew out of the blocks. I think the way USA are going to handle this, they're just going to do what they always do. And if there's any anxiety in France whatsoever, then I think France are in quite a lot of trouble for this, if this tie obviously ends up happening.
OK, well, straight after the game, we caught up with Julien Laurent, French football journalist in Le Havre. Julien, it was a bit squeaky bum time, though, wasn't it, for the French? Because it wasn't a convincing win, although, fair play, you are through.
Yeah, and I guess that's the most important is to book their place in the quarterfinals. But you're right, there was a lot of tension. There was, I think, once again, you know, in the way they played, still a lot of room for improvement. There was a lot of disappointing performances individually by some of the players. And I think once again, they won this game mentally, in how strong they were mentally, you know, when Brazil came back and they had to dig deep, sorry, and to fight hard, and Mbok saved on the line in extra time, for example, when he was still 1-1 and they scored on set pieces, which has been the main asset, you know, to score goals. I think that's the fifth one in the 9 goals they scored that comes on set pieces, whether it's a corner, a wide free kick or a penalty. So clearly, in terms of, you know, the football played, it was not good enough again. And whoever they play in the quarter, they will have to step up and do better. But we've been saying that since the start of the tournament, pretty much. I guess the most important is to have gone through.
It is. But if you do meet the USA next, if they win their game on Monday, then they're going to have several things to perhaps identify within your side that aren't as strong as they should be. And we're also hearing suggestions that perhaps the French players are finding the attention and the hype around the whole tournament quite mentally draining.
Yeah, I think they didn't expect the whole passion around them, the whole media attention as well, even if I think they tried to prepare themselves before the tournament started, you know, and already back in January when they played the US in a friendly in Le Havre, there was a lot of us there, and, you know, they had a feel of what it would be. But until you get to the last 16 of the World Cup at home, you don't really realize what it is, the expectation, the pressure, the media attention, like we said, all the front pages of the newspapers and the, you know, opening the news bulletin with the game and things like that. And it needs a bit of adaptation, really. And maybe that's why they were not so convincing tonight, is because there was a bit of nerves. And especially as the game was going on, Brazil was clearly the better side for most of that game. And they had more shots on target. They had more of the ball, more passes, you know, everything. And yet they still found the resources to go and get that second goal and to qualify. But you're right, if they play the US in the quarters in Paris, there will be even more attention and more expectations and more pressure. And they would have to respond in a much better way, because a performance like tonight against the US will surely not be good enough.
Thanks to Julien Laurent there, French football journalist. Up next, let's discuss Monday's matches.
Balance ton quoi.
Okay, well, let's look ahead to tomorrow's games. Favourites USA meet a Spain side we all got a bit excited about until we realised that they were pretty boring. That's what I've written here. Albeit very good at hanging onto the ball. Is there any threat to the USA here, Tim? Are we in danger of underestimating Spain because of the threat a team like the USA poses, because it's just all them, isn't it?
I mean, it's quite possible, but not given what we've seen from Spain so far in the tournament. Spain have kind of chopped and changed a bit as well tactically during the tournament, which to me just suggests the manager doesn't really have a firm idea of how he wants his team to play. Dropping out Vicky Lozada, he's changing the position that Hermoso's playing quite a lot. And I just don't get the sense that, maybe a bit like England, I just don't get the sense they have a firm idea of how they want to play. And I just can't see anything other than a USA victory here, unless Spain pull something out of the bag that we haven't seen yet in France.
How do they try and pull it out of the bag, Carrie? Does the fact that Spain last played a week ago, the USA 3 days ago, does that play into it? Because the USA have got such a strength and depth in their team, you just get the feeling that they don't think anything will touch them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was Ali Krieger from the USA said earlier in the week that she thinks that the USA have got the best side of the competition and also the second best side in the competition. They do have that strength and depth, and fatigue is not going to play a part there. But yeah, Spain are a very odd side. They should be doing so much better than they actually are. They have so much of the ball. They create so many chances and then do nothing with it. It's very frustrating to watch. But against the USA, who are going to score goals, they're going to have to really come out all-out attack at them. So it's going to be interesting to see how they do actually line up.
Tim, the two sides met earlier this year. Any lessons that can be learnt from that encounter?
Quite possibly. The kind of team lineups back in January were probably quite similar to the ones that we'll see on Monday night, particularly from the US. That very familiar front three started the game. But, you know, this USA team's been together a little while now. But, of course, this was a friendly game back in January. The game's broken up with lots of substitutions, particularly in the second half. Again, like I said earlier, who knows how Spain are going to line up in this one, who they're going to pick, what their formation's going to be. I'm not sure the manager really probably even knows even at this point. So I think maybe not so much learning here, because the USA, they always know what they're doing, I think, more or less. And Spain, probably change what they're doing game to game.
Well, look, Brazil have surprised us tonight, so you never know on Monday. Let's not write them off. OK, well, let's get the American perspective from someone in their camp, in and around the press conferences and following the team through this tournament. It's Grant Wall from Sports Illustrated and Fox Sports TV. From the USA press conference, Jill Ellis, the manager, saying that Alex Morgan and Julie Ertz are fit. So will they start, do you think?
I think they will. From talking, I've talked to both players. I've talked to Jill Ellis. I do believe them when they say these were precautionary situations to take Morgan off after 45 minutes in the last game and to not use Ertz at all. But the knockout rounds are here. And so what they've been dealing with hasn't been serious. And what they've said is if they needed to play, they would have played. They just didn't need to in the last game. So we still haven't seen the whole, like, the expected 11 U.S. lineup that in any of the games so far in this tournament, just because they've held some players out.
Are we going to see that lineup, do you think, Grant? Or is Jill Ellis's game just that she's literally going to keep us and the players on their toes in terms of who's going to start these games?
I think she will be doing that to an extent. But the big question for me is Sam Mewis has been playing so well over the last 2 months that she is fighting her way into the starting 11, even when everyone is healthy. And so I think that's going to be the question is, if you put Sam Mewis in the midfield, what do you then do with, I don't think you sit Rose Lavelle or Lindsey Horan. And so what do you do with Ertz? Do you potentially have her be a center back as opposed to a defensive midfielder? Yeah. That's my preference, but we'll see what ends up being decided for this game against Spain. And look, I don't think anyone is looking ahead and discounting Spain, but we all see there's a possibility of a USA-France quarterfinal, and that would just be a giant game.
Yeah, it surely would. How do the players feel about this, not knowing who's going to start and who's the preferred team? Because a bit like the England players, they all say that they're fine with it. But, you know, you've got some strong personalities there in that US squad. So are they really fine with it?
I mean, some of the complaints I've heard from players over the last couple of years about Jill Ellis, when they do complain about her, is that she's not communicating a lot with them. And I think things have gotten better in the relationship between the veteran U.S. players and Jill Ellis over the last year, year and a half. But there's still occasionally some concerns about that. And when you look at how deep the U.S. roster is, there's going to be disappointed players every single game. When you can bring on an entirely new second string front three of Carly Lloyd, Mal Pugh, and Kristen Press, they would start for any team in the world.
Yeah,
just
true.
About, I would think. And so I think this has been a real challenge for Jill Ellis to manage that situation. And I'll give her some credit. I think she's done a pretty good job of it. But I still think sometimes there's players wondering, why can't she communicate with me a little more clearly about where I stand?
And also interesting to find out what happens when it doesn't go the US's way, because you've cruised through the last three games and you will probably cruise through this one as well, right, America? So interesting to see what happens when it maybe doesn't go all your way. Alex Morgan, right. is she after this record of leading World Cup goals? Because she's now in pole position, really, to beat that Michelle Akers record from 1991. Is she after it? Is that within her sights at all? Or is she not one of those players who's, you know, interested in the golden boot or after kind of records?
I know Alex Morgan pretty well by now. And knowing her and how she's basically been her entire life, she is really driven by goal setting and incentives. And of course, she wants her team to win the World Cup, and that's very important to her. But she's really driven by individual goals as well.
Okay.
And she rewards herself. I guarantee you that she has a specific reward for herself if she wins the Golden Boot,
like,
or sets a record for goals in a World Cup.
Like,
we just
what?
Don't know it yet.
Well, okay, guess. Come on. Indulge
me. It could be like a certain type of car she would buy herself or something like. She's very incentive driven, I guess is the best way to put it.
Okay.
And I wouldn't be surprised if her endorsement contracts have those incentives as well. And so she was really upset to come off at halftime the other night against Sweden. You know, she hasn't been able to add to her five goals from the first game in the second game because she didn't play at all.
Yeah.
And in the third game because she came off after 45. And so I'm sure she had a little fist pump when Sam Kerr went out. And she's going to really be pushing for this. I mean, like, after the game the other night, Alex Morgan didn't talk to the media. She didn't stop to talk. She looked upset.
Just a quick one. A journalist, I don't know if you were there or you saw this, but a journalist asked the Spanish player, Virginia Torrecilla, Ali Krieger said the US has the best team in the world and the second best team. So what's your opinion? And the response from Torrecilla was, who is Ali Krieger? Was that like
that's
ignorance?
Some first-rate banter. she might actually literally not have known. So I was kind of hoping that even if she did know who Ali Krieger was, she said that because it was a perfect response. I like seeing this stuff, to be honest, in the women's game. We need more back and forth like that. I mean, we need more teams to be, I think, less deferential to the United States team. So if Spain wants to play that game, that's awesome. I was a little surprised that Ali Krieger said that. She said it after the Chile game when the U.S. made 7 changes and still won the game. And obviously the U.S. does have a deep team, but do I think factually that the U.S. second team is the second best team in the world? I don't. And so I think it's important to point that out. But clearly, Ali Krieger's got a fair amount of confidence.
Thanks very much to Grant Wall covering the Women's World Cup for Sports Illustrated and Fox Sports. Here's a quick one then to think about on Spain. The Guardian have a power ranking, okay, which if you don't know is the American thing where all the numbers and opinions and stats are all crunched together to create a list of teams ranked on how well they're doing when there's no uniform league, so such as this tournament. So for the round of 16, Susie Rack compiled the Guardian's list and Spain were ranked 16th, so basically last, on count of they dominate teams but just do not convert or create enough chances and have only got 1 goal from open play. They're 3rd against South Africa. Is this a fair ranking?
Well, it's a fairly significant downside, isn't it? If you're not scoring goals in a football match in a tournament where you need to win matches. So, yeah, I think that's probably pretty fair. It sounds cruel. It sounds harsh because Spain should be doing better. But based on current form, they are not doing better.
And it's so confusing, isn't it, when they've got an attacker like Hermoso as well, who's full of goals at club level, but at international level, I don't know.
She's just been okay. But
she's
in the last game,
yeah.
The manager for most of the game sat her back.
She's playing
further
so,
back.
So deep. And so you're not going to score goals from back there. She's trying to get the ball for herself to run onto. It's silly.
All right. Well, if the USA win, don't forget we've got that very enticing prospect of a quarterfinal matchup with France. Well, that's the 5 p.m. kickoff UK time. Let's move on to Canada versus Sweden. This hotly anticipated tie, especially by Claire Rafferty, who's in for the game. Ha ha, Raf. And I am, of course. Will be played in Paris. The jury's out on whether it'll be the Arc de Triomphe of games. 2 very good sides, though. Carrie, can you see much between these 2 teams?
No. In terms of style, I think it's going to be kind of... I think this is going to be a better match than Claire Rafferty would have you believe.
It's also me,
okay.
By the way.
You and Rafferty.
I haven't really sold Canada.
No, okay. I think Sweden will edge it, but I think it will be a better game than anticipated. I think the styles will mesh reasonably nicely. I don't think it's going to get extra time and penalties.
Tim, Canada have got this really good defensive record. Only 2 goals conceded this tournament. That was just in the last game. And before that, there wasn't a single shot on target against them. But they do come off the back of that loss against the Netherlands. Will that have dented their confidence at all?
I think it might be the opposite, actually. I think Canada were really... they really disappointed me against Netherlands, actually. I thought they were... because I rate Canada. I don't think
more
they're
particularly... more than the Netherlands?
Not quite, but I thought they'd be more competitive in that game than they were, and particularly defensively. I thought Netherlands actually got through them quite easily, and everyone knows they've got lots of attacking talent, but Canada are so stingy usually. I think what gives this game a slight bit of extra edge is Sweden effectively forfeited their last group game, so they're under pressure to do something here. I think Canada realised that they were well below their level against Netherlands, and I actually think that's going to motivate them a little bit for this. So I think both sides will come into this with maybe with something to prove.
So fresh legs for Sweden, Carrie, as Tim's hinted. Seven changes were made for Sweden's last group game, so they should be fresher. Here's the quote of the day from Peter Gerhardsen, their manager. What we can expect from tomorrow, he says, is that it's win or you're out. OK, thank you. In other words, we will empty every carbohydrate in the body. It'll be full speed from the start. Well, that's an interesting thought.
Yeah, also slightly gross. But yes, I think what he's saying there is that he's expecting full commitment from his players rather than anything, you know, more tangible.
Evacuated, yes.
Yes. I think Sweden will edge this, but they are going to have to commit everything right from the start, because Canada have, obviously, their talismanic captain in Christine Sinclair, who, when she scores, I always kind of think...
Are you using the word talismanic again?
I am.
Again?
It's okay, my word
thank you.
Again.
Okay, all right,
it's
thank
my
you.
Word of the tournament. When she scores, even if Canada haven't been creating that many chances, you always kind of think it's inevitable that Christine Sinclair is going to do something
yes.
at some point during
and
the match.
And she did score.
And
didn't
she did,
yeah.
exactly. So if Sweden aren't quick out of the blocks and don't try and get their creativity going and get their attacking play underway right from the off, Christine Sinclair is going to do something to you at some point.
Players, key players for both sides. Who stood out for you so far? Who do we need to be looking out for tomorrow if we are perhaps coming into the tournament fresh in this last 16 stage? Tim?
Just to build on Carrie's point there, I think Christine Sinclair versus Nilla Fischer is one to watch.
Yes.
Two of the best women's footballers of the last 10 years. But the player who's really impressed me for Canada, actually, is Jessie Fleming. We know, you know, Christine Sinclair isn't the most mobile forward anymore. I mean, perhaps she never really was,
no,
but perhaps less so now. And what Canada try and do is get those kind of legs running off of her.
Are we going to see Jessie Fleming start this one then?
Maybe, maybe not, but I think she'll be involved at some point. And I can perhaps see her doing something quite significant, you know, maybe towards the end of the game. If she comes off the bench, I can see her being a bit of a kind of kingmaker in this game.
Carrie, Sweden, anyone?
I'm hoping that Kosovari Aslani is going to get a chance from the start again. I really think she's a fantastic player, and I don't think we've seen the best of her necessarily so far.
And she's already scored, what, two goals so far? Top scorer for the Swedish side. Come on so much since playing for Manchester City. And actually, she's the one who's taken the captain's armband when Caroline Seger's come off. Well, the winner of this game meets Germany in the quarterfinals on Saturday in Rennes. OK, predictions time. USA versus Spain. Tim Stillman.
3-1 USA.
Carrie.
4-1 USA.
Canada, Sweden.
I think 1-0 Canada after extra time.
Oh, gosh. OK.
1-0 Sweden after extra time.
Oh, well, I don't think you did so well in your predictions from last night, Carrie. So we will give you another go. Well, we'll find out if that happens tomorrow. And Carrie, we're going to blame you if Canada-Sweden does go to extra time, by
Fair
the way.
Enough.
That awaits on Monday. Until then, find us on Instagram and Twitter at Offside Rule Pod. Plus, we have a website, if you didn't already know, offsiderulepodcast.com. 5 things we learned after the England game. There's also a player 11, so best 11 of the group stages, and loads of great colour pieces there as well. So do check it out. Carrie and Tim, Tim and Carrie, thank you so much for guiding us through this evening's madness. We all need to take a cool lie down. We'll see you again for more tomorrow, Carrie. And Tim, you too, soon as well. Listeners, we'll also speak to you very soon. Au revoir.
The Offside Rule Women's World Cup Edition is a Muddy Knees Media production in association with Spotify.